This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Johnny.
And this is 1990.
Well, it's not 1990.
All right. So in 1990, did you know the Cincinnati Reds were the world champions of baseball?
Yes, I remember that.
Did you know that the Detroit Pistons were the world champions of basketball?
Okay. And this is not a sports podcast, by the way.
The San Francisco 49ers beat the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl.
The San Francisco 49ers did Super Bowl like 4 years in a row, didn't they?
No, that was the Buffalo Bills who went 4 years in a row. Anyway, the median household income in 1990 was $29,943.
And now it's $19,000.
Yeah, no kidding. Unemployment was at 5.6%.
And a first class 56%.
A first class stamp only cost 25 cents.
Are there such things as those anymore?
Yeah, they're like 56 cents now. Oh, so
you just buy a book for
anyway. So, if you
who
guys
was
have
the president?
Oh, the president was George W. Bush, I believe, wasn't it?
George H.W. Bush.
Oh, that's right. H.W. Herbert Walker, not Waldo.
George Bush the first.
Yeah.
George, as it'll be told in the history books.
And J. Danforth Quayle was the vice president.
God, remember that guy.
Interesting
what
thing.
What happened to that guy?
He spelled potato wrong and was shunned from public life forever.
Do you think he's a potato farmer now?
That would be ironically hilarious. So he has to have like a hipster mustache though, and like a little soul patch that
he
waxes,
does.
Like, you know,
like Colonel Sanders, except
but potatoes instead. All right. Another interesting thing: the X rating was replaced by the NC-17 rating for
was
No
that,
Children
that
Under
year?
17 was in 1990. The Simpsons debuted on Fox, and the Euro dance band Milli Vanilli.
Henry and June. Was that the movie that made it NC-17?
That doesn't say.
I think it was.
But Milli Vanilli got called out for lip syncing and lost their Grammy Awards.
Ooh, I love you.
And Seinfeld debuted on NBC.
Oh, okay.
So, all righty then. So, what is all this talk about 1990 mean, Johnny?
That we're just going back in time now.
We're going back. So, all right. So, this is one of the new things that we're doing this year.
Do I need to explain this?
Yes, okay. Because it's a great idea. And when you told me about it, I was all on board.
So this is an idea of guilty pleasure movies that we're going to do, but we're doing it as a randomizer.
Which, to be fair, you did not tell me guilty pleasure movies.
I thought I did originally.
You didn't, but I still went that way.
That's kind of the vibe that it threw off anyways.
Right.
Because it's just we're going to pick five movies from a year
that
we're going to have randomly picked. Mm-hmm. Which we're going to make that easier because that randomizer.
Yeah, that randomizer didn't really do what I wanted it to do.
Yeah. Picking them out of a cup or something is going to be easier. That way we don't pick the same year, too.
Well,
once the year's done, the year's done.
It's gone.
Yeah. So this will be five movies that are guilty pleasures or five. The way my perspective was five movies that if they said I could only watch five movies for 1 year, these would be the five movies from that year that I would watch for 1 year.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, one last thing.
Or you're stuck on an island with five movies you watch. Yeah.
The Hubble Space Telescope launched in 1990.
Sweet.
So I thought that was cool.
And it's still functioning.
Yeah, kind of.
Science. Kind of. It actually is doing better than it was when it got launched.
I think it is doing way better. So, all right. So I will say, neither one of us, I'm assuming, picked the best picture of the year.
What was the best picture?
Driving Miss Daisy.
Oh, damn. I missed that one.
And then
I've never seen Driving Miss Daisy, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then the other like kind of notable movies were Henry and June, like you said, Reversal of Fortune, Dances with Wolves, and Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And none of those are on my list.
Either, no.
Now, that doesn't mean they're not great movies, because they absolutely are.
This
great
is gonna
movies.
This could be shit movies.
This is like... This is the stuff that if you're home on a Saturday and you're flipping through channels, no matter what point that movie's on, You're watching it.
This is the one where if you're sitting on the couch and it's late at night and you know you might fall asleep, you turn it on. Because if you wake up, you still know what happened.
So if you think like the year is 1991 and Ferris Bueller is on TNT, right? Which Ferris Bueller came out in 1986.
Yeah.
You're just going to stop and watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off, no matter what point it's at. So, all right.
Yep.
Cool. All right, let's get started because I have a feeling this is going to go on for a while. All right. So
we'll try to keep this under an hour or at an hour.
Well, let's not have to explain everything.
Let's
just kind of time box it for an hour and 15. And then I did want to talk about some of the notable movies that I'm sure maybe we don't have on our list, but like just to mention.
We just did.
Well, there were a couple other notables that.
What are they? Mention them.
Okay. My Blue Heaven. Steve Martin and Rick Moranis.
Okay. I remember that one.
Lionheart.
Was that the one where he went in the...
Witness protection, yes. Lionheart.
Okay, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Navy SEALs. Michael Biehn.
These are not notable movies.
No, just notable ones that came out. Were these notable to you? Yeah. Die Hard 2 came out in 1990.
I did not do a notable to me list.
Tremors.
Yeah,
with Kevin Bacon,
Fred Ward, yeah.
Fred Ward, Young Guns 2,
yes,
Memphis Belle,
okay,
Hamlet.
How was Memphis Belle really 1990? Yeah.
Lord of the Flies, the one that we all had to watch in school.
I've never seen it
with James Badge.
I've never seen that.
And then what was this? Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, okay.
So, those were just some of the notable
ones. Funny
thing
is, one of those is on my list.
I'm sure. Like, there's two more movies on here that I'm pretty sure that I have as notables that are, I'm pretty sure, are on your list. So I did not say them.
Say them.
Gremlins 2 and Predator 2.
Okay.
So, anyway.
One isn't.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So my first movie from 1990 that...
You totally missed a couple.
Well, I missed a bunch, but I just kind of...
They're on your list, and my list and your list are going to sync up.
I really don't think they are. Okay. So, all right. So my first one that I have here is the John Waters classic, Crybaby.
Okay.
Starring Johnny Depp and Amy Locan. Crybaby is it takes place in 1950s Baltimore.
Yeah.
And Johnny Depp is Crybaby Wade Walker. This cast is notable because it's got Iggy Pop, Ricky Lake, Tracy Lords, and then has Willem Dafoe and Patty Hearst in cameo roles.
Yeah, they played did they play Ricky Lake's parents?
No, they were
Somebody's parents.
They were Tracy Lords' parents, okay. I think. So anyway, and I just love how over the top this movie is.
Well, it's John Waters movie.
I love John Waters movies.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying.
This and Cecil B. DeMille.
Have you ever seen a John Waters movie that was not over the top?
No.
Okay.
So I love the over the top nature. I love the aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ricky Lake's kids, like her little kids, and then every time they're in prison, like. He gets it like when he gets the solitary teardrop tattoo is my favorite scene of the entire movie. So, and then riding, playing chicken on top of the car, singing chicken.
Yeah.
You know, that song.
Yeah. It was making fun of, parodying a little bit the 50s movies.
Yeah. It kind of parodies Grease a little bit.
It kind of parodied like probably what I imagined John Waters seen when he was that age in the 50s.
Yeah.
Because was not a young man at that point.
No. All right. So, it was released on April 6th, 1990.
Oh, I don't have all that data.
It has a runtime of 83 minutes.
Oh, Jesus. Hold on.
It was made for $12 million.
You've become too passionate about this.
Dude, no.
Runtimes, release dates.
One, I started working on this last Tuesday when you left.
Yeah.
Like, maybe 15 minutes after you left.
Okay. All
right. So, and then in the box office, it only made $8.3 million, which was like the 150th best box office of the year.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So that is Crybaby.
So I guess you're going to have to pull all that data from mine because I do not
I'm not pulling all that data for yours. Like, your list will have your stuff and my list has my stuff.
Okay. So two were on your notable list.
Okay.
On my list. And the first one was Tremors.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. See, Tremors. I didn't think you would have Tremors.
Tremors is a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Directed by Ron Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else he's directed. Kevin Bacon, Fred Ward, Michael Gross, and Reba McEntire.
Michael Gross in that role was awesome because Family Ties had either just ended or was near its last season.
It was near its last season, I'm pretty sure. And like,
and
you know,
he was so different.
Totally over the top redneck.
Yeah. And which he was the kind of the hippie super liberal guy on Family Ties.
Yeah, him and Reba McEntire steal that movie. Like, literally steal that movie from everybody else.
Every scene they're in.
Yeah. And that's why he's been in every sequel.
He has been.
Made. He's the only one of the cast members I think I've met, too.
Oh, cool.
Because he was at a Horror Hound one year.
All right.
Yeah, just a fun movie. Not anything serious. Campy enough and weird enough that it was fun.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever seen any of the sequels or the TV series.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've seen Tremors 2 and 3. I never watched the show.
Yeah.
But... cool.
I don't know if Michael Gross was on the show. But
I don't know.
He probably was
no
on the
idea.
Pilot.
He might have been, yeah. So, didn't they have a new one come out recently?
Yes, he's in that too. And his son.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's not his son. It's not Michael Gross's son. It's
the from
the
show,
Bud.
Yeah.
It's Bud's son, yeah.
Awesome. All right. So my next one
I'm pretty
is
sure.
Home Alone.
Okay.
It was the top grossing movie of the year.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Directed by Chris Columbus, produced by John Hughes. We all know the story of Kevin McAllister. I don't know about you, but like Kevin McAllister was always kind of like a hero to every kid ever.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you looked at him that way.
I didn't see this movie until like 4 or 5 years after it had been released.
So we went to Home Alone. I remember Home Alone very vividly because we went there for a kid's birthday party.
Oh,
his
wow.
mom took
okay.
like 10 of us. And all I remember is after the party, we wanted to make booby traps in his house.
See, I was watching MacGyver, so this was just a kid version of MacGyver.
Well, actually, if you think about it, this is the kid version of Die Hard.
That too.
So
it's a cross. Yeah,
it is. So John Williams did the music for this one. It was
I think that's the first time that him and John Williams had collaborated. That's why John Williams did Harry Potter.
It was produced and written by John Hughes, which explains a lot. And it
the whole Illinois thing.
Yep. It was released on November 16th, 1990, had a 103-minute runtime, a budget of $18 million, and it made at the box office $476.7 million in all of the runs that it's done. In that year, it made like $280 million.
And it only had like, what, a month and a half to...
Well, they count those movies... later, but like this was the top movie of
do they count like the 13th quarter
so like the like because like
up until Oscars
The Force Awakens was far and away the top movie of 2015
so
and it had
2 weeks.
All right so that's my top or that's
another one
that's in there that's in my top five Home Alone.
You're just going to put a link to IMDb. That's all you should do. Just put a link to the IMDb pages.
Yeah.
That'll have everything that you probably have.
I actually got a lot of this from Wikipedia and then some other stuff I looked up. So, like, I did.
Doing my research, I found out that Wikipedia is not as accurate as you think.
Absolutely, it's not. But I verified all the box office numbers between.
That's all on IMDb.
IMDb and IMDb. Joe Blow.
Yeah.
So
just put the links for.
Yeah.
That'll.
Anyway.
That'll make your job easier.
I've already got this in electronic format. It's already copy and pasted
so
into the show notes.
So the next notable movie was Gremlins 2.
Yeah. I knew there was
in
no
the
way.
I seen this in a theater in either Myrtle Beach or Daytona Beach.
I didn't see Gremlins 2 until 2001.
Okay. It was one of those movies for a while where you couldn't find a VHS copy.
Yeah.
The VHS copy is edited different than the theatrical copy.
Right.
Because in the theatrical copy, there's a moment where somebody comes out of the theater on the movie and complains to the theater manager that the gremlins are out of control. And he has to go in and get somebody to convince them to get out of the theater box. And it was Hulk Hogan.
Oh, awesome.
And he literally is in Hulk Hogan form doing all the moves and little dudes and all this stuff.
Hey, little brothers.
Yep.
Say your
prayers, calls them little
eat
dudes.
Your vitamins. Yeah. Hey, little dudes.
I forget who it was in the VHS copy.
Oh.
And I think the
Captain
the
Lou Albano
DVD Blu-ray copy has
Hulk Hogan back.
Has the original.
Awesome.
And you can watch it, like all the different versions, I guess.
Oh, nice.
There's like two or three different versions. It's a fun movie. Joe Dante comes back to direct, obviously. Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates come back, which surprisingly they got Phoebe Cates back, but she must have enjoyed
the first time
the
around.
First time around. John Glover.
Yeah.
Who's pretty much playing a fantastical version of Luther.
Yeah. In this. Of Lionel Luther.
Lionel Luther. Yeah. I was like, this is perfect because like later on he plays this guy, but as a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then Christopher Lee's in it. Dick Miller returns as Mr. Futterman.
Yep.
And Key Luke returned as Gizmo's owner.
Yeah.
And then that's pretty much it. There's a lot of, especially for people who are fans of old movies, there's a lot of Easter eggs.
Yeah.
In this movie. At one point, I remember Christopher Lloyd walking out of a back room with a pod from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. This is cool because it totally goes off the rails of what the first Gremlins was and just turns into a, like, satirical, crazy, genetic altering thing. Warner Brothers let him make fun of Warner Brothers and all that. So it's just a fun movie.
It was a good one.
Where Gremlins is kind of serious and funny, this one's just funny.
Well, I mean, Gremlins is definitely a Christmas movie.
Well, yeah.
More than anything.
This is just
This is
just what happens if your people grow up and move to the city.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what it was, and they answered that question. Hopefully we never get a Gremlins 3.
Hopefully. You don't think we'll get a Gremlins 3?
I don't want a Gremlins 3 at this point. If they did it 10 years ago, what are they going to do? Phoebe Cates and Zach Galligan's grandkids?
Maybe. I don't know.
All
right.
We're all getting a little long in the tooth.
We absolutely are. All right. At this pace, we're going to fly through this in like 45 minutes, not even.
Okay, so that's fine. This wasn't meant to be like
I know.
A long one.
Not super deep dive. Okay, so my next one is Days of Thunder.
Okay.
I
knew this was going to be on.
The 1990 American sports action drama.
Sports action.
So this was, I do believe this might have been the last Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer combo. Because I think Don Simpson died.
I think The Rock was.
Sometime after this. No, I think Don Simpson died before The Rock was made. That was the last one before it became Bruckheimer Films.
Was it? I thought the Rock had the Simpson.
Maybe I don't
Bruckheimer
know.
On it.
So, anyway,
I thought the Rock was his last one, but
I'm not 100%.
He was
sure,
sick at that point.
Yeah. So, directed by Tony Scott.
This is just Top Gun 2 with cars.
So this
or
is,
this is Top Gun with cars.
This is superior to Top Gun in every way.
Is it?
In my opinion.
There's no volleyball beach scene. So
well one. Yeah, that's awesome without that. Two, Top Gun didn't have Michael Rooker, did not have John C. Reilly, and did not have Cary Elwes as a bad guy.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. I just really liked it. This was also the first of three movies that Tom and Nicole did together.
Yeah.
Eyes Wide Shut and Far and Away being the other two.
Right.
Eyes
Wide Shut's probably what did their relationship in. This maybe. Is where their relationship started. Eyes Wide Shut is kind of the end of the relationship.
Yeah. So this one was June 27, 1990, a bona fide summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
Budget of $60 million, made $157 million.
I've never seen this movie until like 3 years ago.
Yeah. I've probably watched this movie 100 times.
But I'm not a big Top Gun fan either. I mean, you know, Bruckheimer movies. I really like Bruckheimer movies, but like these two were not like ones where I'm like, I have to watch these all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. This was written by Robert Town, who has been like, you know, he's written a ton of, he wrote The Godfather, was uncredited, for The Godfather, but wrote Tequila Sunrise, wrote one of my personal favorites, Without Limits. He was the writer director on that one, but yeah, he wrote The Firm, Crimson Tide. He was one of the writers on Mission Impossible 1 and 2. Greystoke, he wrote that.
Greystoke.
The Tarzan one.
I was like, Greystoke, what's that?
Yeah. Wrote The Marathon Man, which is a pretty amazing movie with Dennis.
Dustin Hoffman?
Dustin Hoffman. I wanted to say Dennis Hoffman.
Laurence Olivier?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. So, yeah, this movie was just a ton of fun. Like you said, it was very much in the vein of Top Gun.
It's easy to use that format.
Yeah.
I mean, the young guy coming in and he's the new one and all that stuff.
So I did like that his name was Cole Trickle, which was like just was funny.
Just so
it made me
weird.
Laugh.
Just a weird name.
Well, there's a legit,
but that's like
NASCAR,
a NASCAR.
Right, because there's a NASCAR driver named Dick Trickle.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things
which sounds like a disease.
Right? Right?
Not being mean or anything, but it sounds like going to the doctor and saying, I've got the Dick Trickles.
Exactly. Doc, you gotta help
Doc,
me.
Doc, I got the cold trickles. That's the backside.
Oh, goodness. All right. So, notables, the movie was shot on like actual NASCAR tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it featured
a lot of the NASCAR people were very welcoming to them. So it's kind of like the Navy was not welcoming to them during Top Gun.
Right. That was the whole Brockheimer thing, man.
Yeah,
like like him and Michael Bay, they love the military.
Yeah.
So featured Rusty Wallace, Neil Bonnet, and Harry Grant. And then commentator Dr. Jerry Punch from ESPN has a cameo. And Don Simpson was actually in this one as well.
Oh, okay.
So, it's a fun movie. It's, you know, it was kind
it's
of.
It's just a shame they never got Tom Cruise to play a voice of a car in one of the cars.
That would have been
movies.
Amazing. So as one of the race
as
cars.
As Cole Trickle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mellow Yellow,
yeah,
number 95. Without this, this movie is like right there at the cap of NASCAR really becoming like a national phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
And without this movie, we don't get Talladega Nights,
true,
which is kind of a parody of this movie in a way, not really.
John C. Reilly
close.
In both of them, too.
He's in both of them. That's what makes it special. I probably watch this movie twice a year.
This kind of was Nicole Kidman's introduction to
this
the
was her
US.
First like American big.
Yeah, the thing that I
she had
her
done
in was
Dead
Calm
with Sam Neill before.
But that's an Australian
this.
Movie,
right?
Yeah,
it was an Australian movie that got an American cable release
because Billy Zane was in it.
Yep.
Yeah. So. The one American was
Sam
Billy
Sam,
Zane.
Yeah.
Billy
is
Zane
Sam Neill
the,
not American?
No. He's either British or Australian.
All right.
You know that accent's not.
Okay. So Sam Neill, tangent, just real quick. Sam Neill is in that movie, The Hunt for Wilder People, with the kid who killed Cable's kid in Deadpool 2.
Okay.
Which is really funny and you should watch it. And he speaks with a British accent. And it took me a while because he's got a big grizzly beard to realize it was Sam Neill. And then I walked away thinking, man, he does
his
spot on
his
British
accent in Jurassic Park is the British accent, just not as heavy.
Yeah. All right.
And the place where I've seen him where it throws me is he plays Kirsten Dunst's dad in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And he doesn't use the British accent. He uses the American accent.
Yeah. Because
wait a minute.
In Event Horizon, he has an American accent.
I think there's a little bit. It slips in and out on that one.
Like Charlie Hunnam.
Yeah, well, you know.
I've been rewatching Sons of Anarchy.
He doesn't have a practice.
I've been watching Sons of Anarchy and like every fifth word
he slips.
He
can stick with the British accent at this point. Right. Like in anything, I would just be like, you know, you're going to play the British accent.
Did you ever watch the Undecided or whatever show, the Judd Apatow show he was on?
No.
He's just a skinny little waif of a kid. And he's got like.
Is that the one where they're in college or something? Okay.
It was after Freaks and Geeks. It was like Freaks and Geeks, but college.
Oh, okay.
And he speaks in his British accent. And like you watch that and then you go watch Sons of Anarchy. And you're like, that's not even the same person.
That's not the same guy.
And because I mean, he's like.
Right.
Like you watch that and you watch King Arthur. And you're like, get out. No, that's not the same. That's not Charlie Hunnam in Undecided or Undeclared or whatever it is. All right.
Undeclared, I think, is what it is. You kind of hit it on the head there.
Next,
The Hunt for Red October. John McTiernan directed this one.
Yep.
And I think this was the introduction to Jack Ryan.
Yeah.
In movies.
Yeah, this was the
First book that Tom Clancy wrote.
Yeah.
And that it's adapted from the Tom Clancy novel that's about Jack Ryan and a Russian sub commander deciding to steal the new experimental submarine Red October and bring it to the United States.
And yet he had a British accent. So weird.
Scottish. Sam Neill's in it too.
He is.
Yeah.
With an American. No.
No, he actually plays the Russian accent really well.
Yeah, he does. So
James Earl Jones, Tim Curry, like everybody that was on, almost everybody that was a commanding officer on the Hunt for Red October, was a British actor playing a Russian, except for like two of the guys.
because one of the guys actually was from Russia, spoke fluent Russian and all that, and like, you know, they cast him for a reason, obviously.
Because he was in the Spetsna, and there he's like, I'll kill you, comrade.
Yeah. I'll give you all the information you need.
You will cast me,
but I must kill you.
I will kill your family.
I must destroy you.
No,
it's
Hunt for Red October is a really good movie.
It's a really well done movie. I mean, technically speaking, it's probably one of the best sub movies. Das Boot being another one.
Crimson Tide was good.
Yeah. Das Boot was the one that set the trend. Yeah. But that's like a German released movie. And
Down Periscope.
Yeah.
It's a classic. Classic.
But no, I think it's a really well done movie. Sean Connery, one of Sean Connery's best movies, yeah. I think.
This is right before Sean Connery like started really mailing it in movies.
Yeah, that like, was early 2000s.
I feel like I said right before. So
this was 1990.
Yeah, like, but he didn't do like he took some time off. Like he did The Untouchables and like didn't do anything for a while, right?
He did this and he did Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway. 1990s.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Finding Forrester, I think, is one of the first ones where yeah. he kind of...
You're the man now, dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. It's like, yeah, no.
And then he just gave up because of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Entrapment.
No, Entrapment, like, he enjoyed working on, like, that was one of the few movies where you could tell that he was having a good time.
Well, let's be honest.
Catherine
Zeta-Jones.
Are you
not going to enjoy working with Catherine Zeta-Jones in the early 2000s?
Talk about somebody who can do... accents. She's Welsh, but you think she's Hispanic,
yeah,
and she does an American accent perfectly.
She was really good. I mean, she's really good in most of what she does, to be honest. That god awful musical one with Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise did a musical.
It was like he played Stacy Jacks. Crap. Chris Hardwick was in
Rock
the
of Ages.
Rock of Ages. I really liked her in Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
I didn't like much about that movie.
She likes doing musicals too because she does Chicago too. Yeah. I've never seen it, but I know
she was really fun in that one. So
yeah, this is just a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Hunt for Red October is amazing, but you said like, you know, like you were saying, like guilty pleasure stuff. And to me, like that movie's like a pedigree above like
well,
the crap
that,
I've been
it's
picking.
It's that thing where you said it. If it's on,
yeah,
and I just flip it and I'm like, oh, I'm like, okay, I know what happened. So,
so
I can
that's
watch
one
this.
Where like I haven't seen it enough to be at that point.
Yeah.
So if it's on, I'll like, it's got to be early in the movie for me to kind of stick with it. And plus, I only read that book once.
Yeah.
So I like, and I liked it.
The
I was just never. You know.
Similar but not
it's a little different.
This one's one of the closer ones to what actually happens in the book of the Tom Clancy stuff.
So I think Jack Ryan at some point will attempt to recreate this.
Well, I think that's why they said they were going to Russia.
Yeah,
I think that we'll get Marco Ramius as, you know, maybe he's still, you know, Russian. And, you know, modern day Russian compared to now. I don't know what their military strength is at this point.
They're still pretty tough.
Yeah. But so. I mean, it's like, you know, do you do Red October or do you end this series, like have a story with Marco in it? And at the end of the series, Red October is introduced.
I think it's a time jump that happens and they come back having. We never see the Red October.
Oh, like
stuff.
He still says
it's
he met Marco
Ramius.
Yeah.
So. Because I think...
Well, I think that they'll do a story in Russia.
Yeah.
Obviously, with what is going on in the current climate.
I'm not saying there
like
will be
I
a
said,
time
my
jump.
My complaint about Jack Ryan was that, you know...
It's not in the 80s.
How many Arabian...
There's no Cold War.
Right. And how many Arabian terrorists can you have, like, use in stories? It just gets tiresome after a while. There's other terrorist groups in the world.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
But I could see, like, this being one where... Marco and Jack have to work together would be a setup for Red October happens, but we never see it.
Right. Cause we don't need to.
Right. Yeah. We don't need to see the movie, but like, you know, the ending of that one could be like the ending of this one where it's like, Greer was getting stationed in Russia and Jack's going with him. This one could be, you know, Jack saying to Marco, well, what's your next ship name? Red October. And,
Yeah. So,
or he says it in Russian and you have to figure it out and all that shit. That would be cool, kind of cool. What's your next one?
Actually, my next one is going to be a commercial break so people can go get clothed because it's cold out here in Ohio and you should have nice t-shirts to wear.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back.
Let's be honest, shall we? The t-shirt thing isn't going away anytime soon, so you might as well get a garment with some backbone, yes? Well, here comes the Flying Pork Apparel Company to address all your shirty moments in life with honor and respect. Maybe we create a custom tee for your shirty office party, or knock out some smashing jerseys for your shirty softball team. There's also plenty of wearable tee designs available on our website. Having said all that, have a shirty day and visit us at flyingporkapparel.com. That's flyingporkapparel.com.
All right, we're back. Make sure you guys check out Flying Pork Apparel. They have a bunch of Christmas shirts up there that you can buy now for next year.
Oh.
I actually had lunch with Brad from Flying Pork. I had lunch with Brad from Flying Pork Apparel about the week before Christmas, and he had on a reindeer game scorecard shirt that he had made.
Okay.
And it's got all the reindeers, and the Rudolph is at the bottom with zeros because, you know, he wasn't allowed to play.
He wasn't allowed to play the game. Sure.
And he told me, he goes, man, I wish I had thought about this earlier. I always think of good Christmas stuff at Christmas. And it's like, well, great, you have it for next year. And then he has a naughty, nice, like, check shirt.
Sure.
And, like, yeah, so it, but nice is checked. I told him he needs to get a naughty one that I bought for Angel and I for Christmas. But
oh, okay.
She didn't want to wear it at the same time, which made me sad.
That anyway, makes me happy.
FlyingPorkApparelCompany.com. Check it out.
That's one of those things I don't like is the matching t-shirt.
Well, thing. No, I don't like it either. I wanted to do it ironically stupid. So,
do that in Disney. Down in Disney, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Or in Disneyland. Yeah. You can wear matching t-shirts.
Yeah, that's all right. All right. All right. So next for me is the 1990 American
action. Well, they're all 1990.
I know.
Are you reading this off the paper? Yeah. Okay.
It's the 1990 American action thriller directed by Bruce Malmuth, starring Steven Seagal, Kelly LeBrock, William Sadler, and Frederick Coffin. Hard to Kill.
Oh, Hard to Kill.
So Out for Justice came out. There were three Steven Seagal movies in 1990 that came out. There were also three Jean-Claude Van Damme movies that came
out. Right, because they were easy to make.
Yeah, like they made them in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So Hard to Kill is, he plays, and I love this name, Mason Storm, a detective who falls into a coma after being shot in a firefight that killed his wife, and he reawakens 7 years later and embarks on a journey to avenge the death of his wife and expose the
corrupt senator. Is this the one where they kind of explain Senator the time Vernon jump with Trent. He has a beard?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's how you explain that time has
but
passed.
It's not a full beard.
Right.
It's a goatee.
Right.
And his hair is still luscious and like Steven Seagal, like, you know. But he's.
What was his name? Mason Storm?
Mason Storm.
Mason Storm and Cole Trickle.
Right. Yeah, so this was a great one, and
I haven't seen this in years.
I love this movie
was
so much.
This is where him and Kelly, you picked movies where couples met.
This and Fire Down Below are my two favorite Steven Seagal movies. And I'm totally ride or die for this one.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those
things.
If
you're stuck on an island in 1990, this will be a movie that you get.
Dude, if I'm stuck on an island now, this might be a movie I bring with me. So there's no accounting for taste. And, you know, I'm not, by no means do I look
at
this.
I'm not saying
I
never watched any of these movies. It's just been a while.
No. All right. So him having to.
Your comparison of Hunt for Red October is the same for this for me. I have not watched this movie enough to go say, I can watch this at any point in this movie.
So what I love about this movie, he's in a coma. He has her push him out on the stretcher to her, like, la car. And they get out of the hospital just before the assassins get there to kill him. Right? And they go off to her friend's dojo out in the mountains.
Right.
And he does acupuncture on himself and, like, gets his muscles back.
Yeah, because he couldn't walk and all that.
He's got the training montage. Like, it's the Rocky IV-esque.
Around.
Yeah, it's like the Rocky IV-esque where he's running up the mountain. He goes and he plants a two by six in the ground and puts the rope around it, and he's just practice punching punching it until he punches it and it flies out of the ground.
Right.
It's like, it's so great. It's such a bad movie. I'm pretty sure Powers Booth is in this movie too.
Oh, I'm sure he is. If he's not, then he should have been.
I feel like
you gotta look that one up now.
I do have to look that. I don't think he was.
Powers Booth was in at least one Steven Seagal movie, if not two.
Yeah, let's see.
Playing different characters.
No, he's not in this one. So. But I mean, like, the names, right? Dan Holland, Max Quintero, Jack Axel.
Are these the actors' names? Or
no,
the
character names. So,
because these sound like actor names too.
They do sound like porn actors, maybe. So anyway, yeah, this is just, I mean, this movie is so much fun. It rocks a 33 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh wow.
But here's the thing, It's Hard to Kill had a box office of $47.4 million.
Yeah,
it did better than Goodfellas in the theater.
Goodfellas.
It also did better than RoboCop 2.
Anything's going to do better.
Well,
than
yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
Jeez.
I was just surprised. You know, you think of Goodfellas, and it's this cult, like, classic.
Well,
that,
because it's a video release thing, you sit at home and watch it. That's the type of movie where it's like, I don't want to go see that in the theater, because if I got to go pee, I'm going to go
Goodfellas?
Pee.
Yeah. So.
That's a pause movie.
Right yeah, there. you gotta hit pause. And,
yeah.
Or on VHS, hit stop, because pause would ruin the tape.
But I was running it, so it didn't matter anyways.
You still got to take care of that stuff. So
anyway. I only had to pay for the rental.
All right.
I had the Blockbuster subscription pass thing where you could just.
Remember
that?
I do.
A couple years ago when you gave me the wallet that I have now.
Yeah.
I went through and cleaned out the old wallet and still have my Blockbuster card.
I still have my Blockbuster card.
I don't know where it is now, but I had it at that point.
I will say, William Sadler in this movie, who plays the corrupt senator.
There you
go.
There's the Powers Booth of this movie, William Sadler.
He does not look any different in this movie than he does in, like, Iron Man 3.
Right.
When he's the president. Like, the dude does not age.
Oh, I know.
At all. The only time he looks different in a movie from being William Sadler is when he played Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I like that he played Beth. In Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Bill and Beds.
Dylan Ted's
Bogus.
Beth appears.
So, God, he better be back for the third one as Death.
He has to be.
I really hope so. When they play Twister,
he would do it. I mean, he would do it. Yeah.
So,
it's funny, when I met him, I referred to him as Mr. President, and he's like, I like that. Yeah. He goes, that's cool. I like that.
I would have referred to him as Mr. Reaper.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Iron Man 3 had come out.
I'm still, you know.
At the time.
So. But yeah, he's in everything. I mean, he has like a 40-year career.
Right.
And he's kind of a that guy. Like, oh, I know that guy. But he's also at the same time, like, that's William Sadler. Yeah. Like, he's awesome.
Well, when he shows up in Die Hard 2, that's when you're like, I know that guy from somewhere.
Well, and he's doing naked Tai Chi in the hotel room, right? So, which, coincidentally, this Die Hard 2 came out in the same year. So,
William Sadler could do that. He could be in, like, 5 movies in 1 year, probably.
Yeah.
We should do that as an episode.
Well, this was February 9th, 1990, so. Anyway.
Do that as an episode. How many movies has William Sadler been in 1 year?
Ooh, well, I mean, we could do that for Seagal. We could do that for Van Damme. We could do that for Sam Jackson.
But I'm talking about
the
character actors. That guy.
I think you could do that for Sam Jackson. Like
Reginald Bell Johnson.
Was he in a lot of movies?
He's in a lot of movies and you don't know until you start.
We
watched Turner and Hooch the other night and I didn't realize.
Is he Turner and Hooch?
Yes. Yes.
That's the one with Tom Hanks and the dog, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that one was like one where I was like, no way. I'm like, Reginald Bell Johnson.
Interesting. All right, what do you got next?
Back to the Future 3.
I left that out of the notables because I assumed that
you figured
had it,
I was
going
to. Yeah.
Now, this movie gets a bad rap.
I don't understand why, though.
Like, people are like, this is the worst
movie. You know
movie
why it gets
of
a bad rap? It's because it's Westerns. The Western thing.
Sure, fair enough. But most people like say this is the worst one.
I think 2's the worst.
Back
one.
To the Future 2 is the worst.
Yeah. One. I think 2 is the worst one.
Now, I'll be honest.
2
like,
is the funnest campy one.
Yeah.
But 2 is the worst one. Like, worst written one.
Yeah.
Because when they get to the alternate timeline, they didn't know how to write everybody as bad.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, does Biff come off as a believable killer?
No.
No. So it's like, you know, that's where I was like, that's just bad writing in that one.
And then shoehorning Elizabeth Shue.
Well, you know, they had to have somebody replace the original actress.
But they didn't. They could have just left her on the porch.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, they couldn't.
I know.
Edit the end of the first. You know what's fun is go on YouTube and find the edit where somebody took
the first movies end.
Yeah.
And the beginning of the second one, which is the same scene.
Right.
And how different they are.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're really different. There's like a lot of different shots. And I think that Christopher Lloyd was sick when they were shooting Back to the Future 2.
Oh.
He is much paler.
Ah.
Yeah.
Maybe he was just had a cold.
This movie is just fun, though, because it's
like. It is fun.
Wild West with Doc Brown.
Right.
You know, there's references to stuff that happened in the other movies, like the whole Clint Eastwood thing is because of Biff watching a Clint Eastwood movie in Back to the Future 2, the shootout where he puts the metal plate underneath. Yeah. I mean, it's just the little things. Yeah. And then, like, you know, ZZ Top actually showing up playing their song that's in the movie soundtrack as an Old West version. Was fun. I mean,
I really liked Irish Marty McFly.
I was gonna say Seamus McFly was fun. How Leah Thompson is his ancestor and not his ancestor.
That's kind of creepy.
It's like, wait a minute, did the line split somewhere?
They kind of shoehorned Leah Thompson. Mary Steenburgen is I love her, she's awesome.
Oh, she was great in this movie.
You want to see a cool thing with her in it? Justified.
Yeah.
Because she plays a bad guy.
Yep.
And is like sexy and terrifying. And like you get all sorts of weird feelings.
That's
about
Mary
like,
Steenburgen anyways.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but she's so good. I liked her a lot in Step Brothers.
Never seen Step Brothers.
You got to see Step Brothers.
Never seen Step Brothers.
You know what we should do is we should do an episode of like movies we haven't seen and watch like, identify ones we haven't seen and like sit down and watch them together, like so we can make fun of, like, you know, like for me, Lilo and Stitch.
Or you've Mulan. Never seen Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, or Mulan.
And they're both available.
Oh well, yeah, they're So and you could come over and watch Step Brothers because I own like all three like formats of it with DVD, Blu-ray, and digital.
Oh geez.
I always buy it on sale, but
yeah.
But Back to the Future 3, you're absolutely right, is great. In confines of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I would still like, I'll watch the first one and I don't have to watch
it. I was going to say, it's kind of like the Matrix where, you know, it's a trilogy, but you don't have to watch the trilogy.
Right. That's it was planned to be a trilogy, which is nice.
It was planned to be a trilogy and they shot the second one and third one at the same time. So I remember, I didn't see the third one in the theater, but I remember seeing the second one in the theater and literally at the end, it had the preview for
the
Back
third
to
one,
but there was no like words. It was just the music playing.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, so they're going to the Wild Wild West now.
Yeah.
And which wasn't a thing at the time, but
Wild Wild West.
Yeah. So that, yeah, that Robert Zemeckis obviously directed it and you know, everybody came back and Mary Steenburgen that was her first movie and her last Back to the Future movie.
I did like the train.
The train was a cool idea, and you know, it was used in the comic books and it was used in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And that, but you know,
there is the like weird thing about the one little kid like playing with himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you couldn't get out like a bottle of water and like squirt him like a cat.
Oh, yeah. Edit that thing edit that out a little bit.
Yeah, you can't crop that.
Yeah.
Was that Jules or Vern?
Yeah. I don't remember.
The ending of Back to the Future 3, though, was actually kind of satisfying.
Yeah.
Because after watching 2, you totally thought, okay, Marty is going to self-fulfill that prophecy and end up like he did in 2.
Right.
And that's how we're going to leave
our hero. That was the other thing about 2 that made me, like, aggravated me about the whole series was the chicken thing.
What are you, chicken?
Yeah, what are you, chicken? I ain't chicken. What? Where did that come from?
You calling me Yella?
Yeah, it's like, why didn't they have that in the first movie? Because they could have used that against him.
Yeah.
And made the story even more interesting. Or they could have just left it out altogether and made a better story.
I thought the manure
gag... They had a lot of issues with that second movie, like, before it even got
production.
Crispin Glover.
Crispin wasn't in it.
Well, he felt and then, he should have been getting paid Michael J. Fox money.
Whatever, I don't agree with that, but whatever. And then they used his likeness without his permission.
That was also, yeah.
And so there's that. I mean, like, this movie, the second movie.
It set a lot of union rules.
Set a lot of precedents and
things
like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of rules with the Screen Actors Guild now that weren't there before Back to the Future 2.
Right.
There should have been some rules about writing, though.
Well, I mean, I don't know
if it was just, you know, because the studio got their hands in it more than they did in the first one.
Because they didn't think the first one was going to do anything.
Well, right.
Because
they
changed their star, 3 weeks in?
3 weeks in, yeah.
So,
they had shot a bunch of stuff on that one. And, you know, this, I think 3 was just an afterthought, kind of.
I think 3 was an attempt at a course correction. So, all right. Just kind of looking at this one and looking at another franchise that has its third movie coming out that had a second movie that kind of destroyed
Star Wars.
Yeah. Like they tried to course correct some things with 3.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what Star Wars is going to try and do.
Maybe. Yeah.
And it may or may not be well received.
I think that we'll get a time jump in that movie so they can explain enough off.
Maybe.
And that, but you know,
I mean,
Leia's going to show up a lot as a hologram.
Episode 9 has to be 5 years in the future when it starts.
Like I said, Leia's going to be showing up as a hologram a lot.
I don't know. I don't know, but it was,
what's your next one?
Yeah.
Your last one?
My last one.
Yeah.
Is classic.
Okay.
Christian Slater, Samantha Mathis.
Oh yeah.
And their Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah.
Hard on Harry. This was actually one of the first novelizations I read.
Okay.
As well. Like, you know.
Like the novelization of the movie?
Of the movie.
I think I still have it. Back to the Future 3 and Gremlins 2. Nice. I read those.
You know, to be honest, when we do the podcast sometimes I'm thinking like, we could do what he did. And just be filthy and wrong and hilarious and awful. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time it's like that would get old really fast. Heathers, Cuffs, those kind of movies. I've always liked Christian Slater, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves as Will Scarlet, Gleaming the Cube.
I was going to say, I remember Gleaming the Cube.
That was my gateway into my Christian Slater drug.
Right.
And then him and Samantha Mathis, one, I had a huge crush on her after this movie, and then they were together in Broken Arrow.
Yeah, okay.
And it made me sad that they didn't figure out a way to
have them work together more.
Work together or reference this. All right. So if you don't know, which you probably don't because this wasn't a super popular movie, they call it a comedy drama.
Because it has comedic elements.
It's more of a dramedy, probably.
It would be now they would call it a black comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He plays a guy named Mark Hunter whose parents move him to a new high school because his dad is either the principal or the superintendent.
I don't remember.
And Mark is just this quiet, mousy guy.
Yeah, it's the Clark Kent thing.
It is. And so he starts a pirate radio station where he plays music from Jesus and Mary Chain, Primal Scream, Soundgarden, Ice-T, Bad Brains, Concrete Blondes, Henry Rollins and the Pixies. Not Henry Rollins, Henry Rollins.
This movie kind of is a Footloose type movie.
It's very much Footloose without the dancing.
Yeah.
And you look at the cast that was in this one, right? You've got him and Samantha Mathis, where'd it go? I want to say, was it? Yeah, Amit Zappa's in this. There's a lot of Seth Green shows up.
Yeah.
There's some just low
key people.
Seth
Green shows up a lot in early 90s movies where you're like, hey, that guy's somebody now.
That's Seth Green.
He would have been one of those that guys if it wouldn't have been for a couple of lucky things. But, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah. Airborne. Remember Airborne?
Yeah. It was filmed here. So.
Here in Cincinnati. Real quick, this movie made $11 million. $11.5 million in the theater. It was released on August 22nd, 1990. This is one I've owned in various formats as well.
Okay.
It's one I really enjoy watching. You can actually watch the whole thing live on YouTube.
Really?
Just look it up.
I've found a few movies that you can't find anywhere else on there, too. Yeah.
it's one of those movies that you watch and you think, wow, like the thing that dates this movie is the fact that these kids are listening to the radio.
Yeah.
Now
cassettes.
Well, now it would be he would be doing like a vlog or something like that, or a podcast.
Podcast,
maybe.
Right.
And to be honest, that's the only thing that dates the movie.
Yeah.
Now the thing is if it was a podcast or a vlogger or YouTube or something like that, the FCC wouldn't be trying to like hunt him down and find him.
They would just shut it down.
They would just kick him off the platform. Yeah. So there's that aspect to it. When the climax of this movie, when they're trying to find him and they're in his mom's Jeep and he's
broadcasting
right, as yeah. they're driving around, is great. The one thing is, what was the writer?
It was easier for him to do that. Now it wouldn't be easy. Right. You'd have to get a Wi-Fi signal. And
Right. Well, I mean, you could just do it from your phone. Right. Alan Moyle is the writer director.
Okay.
And it's based loosely on his experience having like going to a high school that was much like this, where he lived in Canada.
Right.
And what was happening is they would kick kids with lower test scores out to make the school look better.
Ah.
And if you remember in the movie, they and again, this is why it's kind of relevant today and why it's my last one, is they targeted immigrants because it was an Arizona school. So there were lots of Latino kids and they were always getting kicked out. And then like the troublemaker white kids were getting kicked out.
Right.
I don't remember very many black people in this movie.
Maybe not in Arizona.
I'm not 100% sure. I've only been to Phoenix once and I was just too hot to worry about anything around me.
Well, you look at regional things.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, Arizona would be Latinos, American Indians, and white people.
Yeah.
Mainly. Just like Atlanta is African American.
Sure.
And, you know, white.
And then the last thing is, this is one of the first movies that dealt with like suicide that I saw, and like 13 Reasons Why I should have gone back and watched this movie to just kind of refresh itself with like what was going on, especially with the second season. But you had the character Paige Woodward who put all her medals and stuff in the microwave, remember, and turned it on and blew it up and like cut her face up.
Right.
Like, That was crazy to watch back then and to see. I unfortunately didn't
because
get
of MTV
to,
a lot. I mean, we found out a lot more of this stuff was actually happening.
Right.
You know?
And I think this is a movie that like right there at the beginning of the MTV generation becoming more than just watching MTV at home.
Right.
It's like we were bringing out, this is a very Gen X movie.
Right.
I guess is kind of the way to put it, even though it's 1990.
Yeah.
It kind of like, I'm not saying this kicked off Gen X, but this is right there at the beginning of
a catalyst
of that. Like, hey, you know, grunge came very shortly after this to the mainstream. Yeah. Not like, but grunge had been around for a little while. It's not like grunge started on January 1st, 1990.
It just was in one locale and started to spread.
Yeah.
The music spread.
Right.
You know. It's like any type of music where something new comes, it takes a while for it to get out. Now it doesn't, but back then it did because people were just passing cassettes on to each other and that. So,
and then I think if you're going to...
Here's a mixtape.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think if you're going to look at this as compared to something else too, it's got a little Catcher in the Rye to it. There's a little Holden Caulfield to him.
Right.
You know, and then... You know, it's also funny in looking back at it, because I actually watched it last night.
I haven't seen this in years either.
I had it, and it's like, I had five movies I could pick to watch, and this was the one I picked.
Okay.
So it's got that kind of what's happening with stand-up comedy right now, where people can be funny to a point.
Yeah.
But there's things that are off limits, and in reality, words are not... what hurt you. Ideas aren't even necessarily what hurt you. It's really the actions that those spur on.
Yeah.
And kind of understanding how to use those words for good and for bad.
Right.
It is what you should look at this movie and take away from. But yeah, this is, it's just, it's a great movie, and it's thought provoking. It's really well acted. It's really well written. And you know, Christian Slater is, he's awesome.
Yeah.
So
mine's totally like in a total different direction.
Sure. Yeah. I went kind of serious.
He was like all serious in that. So my last one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
See, I knew you were going to have that one too, which is why I didn't put it on notables.
Oh, I remember seeing this in a theater.
I remember seeing that in the theater, and all I could think of is like, hey, that's Corey Feldman.
Oh, when Donatello talks.
Every time. That's all I could think about. Was, hey, that's Donatello. Or that's Corey Feldman. That's
so
Donatello.
I seen this in a very small theater, and this is the first time I ever sat up front. Like, the screen was right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the weirdest thing ever. And I remember that because the it was raining, mm-hmm. and the whole front hallway at Marymount.
Yeah.
The whole front hallway was full because everybody had brought their kids to see this movie. And I think, I was 15.
Oh, wow.
So I was one of the older kids there, but my mom was like, let's go see this movie.
Yeah.
And
your mom's like, you like this cartoon and all of these
Well, my mom likes like turtles, yeah. like the cartoon and that too. So it was one of those things where it was like, you know, I don't remember like watching the cartoon that much, but I think my sister watched it more than I did.
Yeah.
I just liked Michelangelo and she knew that. So that's
who are the other voice actors for the turtles? I forget.
Brian Tochi played Leonardo, mm-hmm. and Robbie Rist played, I want to say he played Michelangelo, but I don't remember who played. Hold on. Let me get on the internet real fast.
The internets.
I don't remember who played Raphael. I actually think the guy who was playing Raphael, like playing in the costume, played the voice.
Oh, okay.
And if I remember, not that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's what sucks about there being more than one now.
Yeah.
Is there's two.
You just got to type in 1990.
Yeah.
So
this is the first introduction for Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
To me.
Okay.
As Casey Jones.
Right.
And you know, now, yeah, Josh Pikes. He played Raphael, and he played the voice.
Okay.
And he also, I think, was the pizza delivery guy.
Cool.
Yeah, like everybody who was in the costumes showed up in the movie as something.
Just remember, Robbie Rist was Cousin Oliver.
Yeah.
So let's not forget
that. Brian Tucci was one of the nerds in Revenge of the Nerds.
Yep. You had Judith Hogue as April O'Neil, mm-hmm. who was not April O'Neil in the second one, but came back for April O'Neil in the third one, if mm-hmm. I'm correct. No?
Nope. Paige Turco was...
Or did I have April. That backwards?
No. Paige Turco was April O'Neil in 2 and 3.
Oh, okay.
Pretty sure.
So.
Judith Hogue only did the first one.
Oh, that's what... Okay, then that's what I
was thinking.
And
then she came back for one of the animated specials or something.
Maybe
and played April O'Neil in that, I'm pretty sure.
I know...
I think she cameoed in the... Megan Fox one too.
Oh, cool. I know Elias Koteas from that Christopher Walken movie, The Prophecy.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So, this movie was fun. Okay, so compare this one to, you know, the...
Pump up the volume.
No. to the most recent Ninja Turtles movies, right? Like, this is... We got to see the real-life Turtles, the real-life Foot, a real life Shredder, and very much in the vein of the cartoon.
They weren't in the vein of the cartoon though. They were in the vein of the original comics.
Do you think they were?
Yeah, they were more in the vein of the comics, except, you know, Michelangelo was more fun loving and that Raphael was pretty much
okay.
Like the
then
hard,
I read that wrong.
Hardcore like ninja warrior and that, and Leonardo was trying to keep everybody wrangled in, and Splinter was the wise old master.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like the cartoon where, you know, Splinter walked around a lot.
Yeah.
The trivia is in here. It says the actors who physically portrayed the Turtles also cameoed in the film. Josh Pice, who plays Raphael, plays a passenger in the back of a taxi cab right after Raphael hops on the cab's hood.
Okay.
He's the one who goes, "What was that?"
Oh.
Michelin Sisti, who plays Michelangelo, plays the pizza delivery guy who delivers the pizza to the Turtles.
Okay.
Through the, you know, put it through the grate, dude. Leif Tilden, who plays Donatello, plays the foot messenger that meets April in the subway station.
Okay.
And Dave Foreman, who plays Leonardo, plays a gang member in the warehouse during Casey's fight with Tatsu.
Ah. cool.
The coolest thing in here that I didn't know until just now, Robin Williams, who was a big fan of the franchise, provided Judith Hogue with information regarding her character through this comic, through his comic book collection. The two were co-starring in Cadillac Men when the Turtles film was in production.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
I did not know that Robin Williams was a Turtles fan.
Was. Oh. Anyway. Yeah, Turtles was fun.
Jim Henson Studio designed all the turtle costumes.
I thought the turtle, I always liked the turtle costumes.
They were some of the best, like, you know,
like
practical.
I look at the practical effects from the Turtles movies and the practical effects from the first two Planet of the Apes movies as what you should strive towards when making anthropomorphic animals with their lips moving and like interacting.
Yeah.
I thought they were done really, really well.
Judith Hogue. Was she in? She was in Armageddon. She was edited out. Or no, she was in Armageddon.
No.
She played his friend's ex-girlfriend that had the kid.
Oh, Will, what's his name's wife? Ex-wife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought she did a... Oh, maybe she didn't. I thought she did a cameo in the new Turtles movie. But I guess she didn't.
Maybe not.
She's been in a lot of stuff. I've seen her in a lot of stuff. And that she shows up on a lot of TV series and that now.
Cool.
Now, Elias Koteas was on The Killing.
Yeah.
Like, he has a pretty big part in The Killing. So. But, yeah, this movie's just a fun movie.
Cool. Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman.
Anyway. Kevin Clash played Splinter.
Oh, okay.
Cool. He plays Elmo. Or he did play Elmo, too.
Elmo played Splinter. That's
hilarious. And James Saito played the Shredder.
Cool.
And then there was a voice for the Shredder, too.
Awesome. All right. Well, that was 1990, man. It was a good year. Lots of fun movies came out.
Yeah, I think so.
It was a very formative year for movies for us.
Some years I've looked at, it's because I've been looking at
been looking, so. When we randomly pick some of these years, we might have to take a peek.
Like, I went through and just took out every movie that I ever remember seeing.
Yeah.
Like, in a theater or, like, seeing at all. Because some movies, obviously, I did not see in a theater.
Yeah.
And but it's, like, going through that and then looking at what I seen, I'm like, wow, I seen a good amount of junk. Or I've watched a good amount of junk. I mean, like, I should go through and mark the ones I remember seeing in a theater. And that, so I can just add that into the mix. And that,
of my list, the only one I saw in the theater was Home Alone.
Really?
Well, it was. I was in what?
How old were you?
Seventh grade, sixth grade, fifth grade. I don't know. Something like that. 1990.
I turned 15 in 1990. Yeah. So,
like, I didn't start high school until 1992. So seventh grade. Crybaby was because of cable.
Yeah,
Days of Thunder was because of home video. Hard to Kill was because my uncle was a sleazebag and let us watch rated R movies.
Oh, okay.
And Pump Up the Volume was because I checked the book out of the library.
Pump Up the Volume was a cable one for me. I seen Back to the Future 3. I did not see. I seen Gremlins 2 and I seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I seen 2 out of the 5 in the theater.
Cool.
And
awesome. All right.
I'm not surprised that I didn't see Tremors in a theater.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we are recording this on Monday, January 14th. Tomorrow is Johnny's birthday.
Yes.
The 15th. Happy birthday, buddy. So
I'll be 15.
He's going to be 15 and
holding. It's 1990 and I'm 15.
He's 15 and holding for what would this be? The 30,
37? What year is this?
No, I'm trying to think because
it's 2019, right?
You're 43, right?
I'll be 44 tomorrow.
44.
Yeah.
Okay, so this would be the 29th. So your 29th anniversary
this
of your 15th birthday.
This is 15 to the 29th power.
So anyway, so after you guys listen to this.
I don't think I'd want to be 15 again.
No.
I'd do 17 again.
No.
I would totally do 17 again.
No. Anywho.
Fun times.
All right. On that note, go
it
visit Johnny.
Down to the point that I was like, are we still recording?
Yeah, no. It's, I have it like smaller. I don't know if you can tell.
That's probably what it is.
So when I was editing, I forgot to edit last week's episode until Saturday at like 10 p.m.
Oh, well, there you go.
And so I had to move a bunch of stuff around. Okay. So I took and I squished everything down. So it was just little like slivers and just
gotcha.
Boop, 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 and got it done really quick.
So we're not going to hold this to once a month or anything. No. This will just be random. Yep.
Yeah.
And this will be taking place between 1975, the year I was born, and 2015, the year the podcast was born.
Right.
Because we did, I think we did do a like best of the year for that, but this is not best of the year. And, you know, maybe eventually we'll do after 2015, but we've got 40 years to.
Yeah, we've got 40 years to poke around with.
Yeah.
So now we're not going to do 40 of these.
Not all at once.
We're probably not even going to do 10 of these. Let's be honest.
We will. This is actually a fun one.
This was a lot of fun. Yeah.
So this is fun going back and looking at what, like, especially if you remember what you've seen.
Yeah.
And then looking at, what did I see in a theater? Did I see this in a theater? That's where I was like, did I see this in a theater? And
so
I'm like, this is cool.
When we picked 1990 last week after we finished recording, I had 3 of my 5 already done.
Oh, okay.
So
I was trying to remember what the hell came out in 1990. You said Tremors, and I'm like, oh, well, that's one for sure. So,
I had Pump of the Volume, Days of Thunder, and Home Alone ready to go. I thought Crybaby came out much later than 1990. So.
No.
And I thought Hard to Kill was way earlier than 1990. So, all righty then. Well, I tell you what, guys, gals, everyone listening, let us know what movie from the 90s, from 1990, did you guys like? If you've seen the movies that we've picked, what did you guys think of those movies?
Yeah.
Let us know. And on that note,
let us know, what would you watch if you were stuck on an island?
Yeah, what would be your...
And the only box of movies was from 1990s.
Yeah. Yeah, the pirate is about to throw you overboard with... he's like, here, you can pick 5 movies out of this.
Pirates of the Caribbean, and this is the only thing you get.
We're going to keelhaul you.
A box of rum and a box of 1990s movies.
Ooh, that wouldn't be bad. That would, like... Okay, trapped on a desert island with a box of rum and a box of movies I like?
Yeah.
There's worse ways to die, man.
Yeah.
There's worse ways. All right, guys. On that note, we will talk to you next week. Happy birthday, Johnny.
Thanks.
Later.
Bye.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. The show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @infamouspodcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and we're looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny online @JohnnyPodorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. Music in this episode was provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.